that, if you could put this around your neck.
So, second book up, we'll be talking about e-brains and representation.
All right, so this is not a final work, which has appeared somewhere. So this is based on work in progress. With Ed Witten. And the main goal of this work is to classify or understand representations of various forms of real groups. So I'll write GR to emphasize that we're thinking mainly of real groups, which is some subgroup in the complexification of it, which I'll sometimes denote by C, GC, in terms of geometry or, as we'll find, actually geometry is not quite enough. You need to put some additional data on top of geometric manifolds or submanifolds, which coincide with the choice of gauge bundle, and that this we know as description of D-brains. So in fact, that explains the title. We'll be able to classify or describe representations of real groups in terms of D-brains on Stern manifolds. And which D-brains and which manifolds is precisely the question I should try to explain. Before I do this, I can give a simple example, which is a cute problem in itself. So the framework for this construction will be a topological twist of n equals 4 supersymmetric Young-Mills theory. Young-Mills theory is, its action is based on gauge group G, which is of course a real form, but a very special one, namely it's compact real form of GC. So therefore, at least we're not yet in that realm of generality where we're able to see directly where the real group, real other real forms would come from. So there will be some more steps to make. So we consider this particular four-dimensional gauge theory, and it's a very special twist, which is called gel twist for its applications to the geometric Langlands. But I'm not going to assume many facts to be known about this theory, because again, we'll quickly translate the problem into studying D-brains on a Stern space. So this I'm describing only as a motivation, although last year in this seminar we had essentially 90% of talks devoted to studying this particular theory.
Not this seminar, the 130 seminar.
Sorry, right, 130 seminar. But to me they're all mathematical physics seminars. In this theory, one can consider it on any form manifold. So let me try to consider this theory. So take this theory, namely GL twist of n equals 4 super Young-Mills with gauge group G on form manifold, which is some three-dimensional manifold W cross the interval. So this is W, and this is interval. Then, in order to specify the physical theory, we have to put certain boundary conditions at both boundaries, namely W cross 0 and W cross 1. And the claim is the following. If you choose certain boundary conditions, which I'll denote as follows, On one boundary, I'll put a boundary condition, which I'll call BCC. And on the, I'll explain what that means. On the other boundary, I'll put boundary conditions, which I'll call B prime, such that, roughly speaking, again, I'm going to make this much clearer later, but in terms of gauge theory, let B prime be a set of boundary conditions which correspond to setting the Higgs field to zero. So remember that n equals 4 theory involves Higgs fields, which some of which become one-forms on a four-manifold, but it's not so important because we're setting them to zero with these boundary conditions anyway. So claim is that this is a supersymmetric boundary conditions. And on this boundary, we'll do the following. We'll take the self-dual part of the curvature of the gauge field. So far, nothing has been said about the on this gauge connection. Restricted to W, because we want to have some boundary conditions, and set that guy to zero. So claim is, what kind of theory do we get? First of all, statement that one can check is that these are interesting boundary conditions which are compatible with supersymmetry, and then the topological version of the theory compatible with topological supersymmetry. So they preserve topological nature of the theory. Therefore, because, again, we're talking about topological theory, it should be roughly equivalent to some three-dimensional 2q of t on our three-manifold w. Well, simply because in topological theory, the sizes don't matter, and you can think of size of the interval to be tiny. So this is kind of compactification, except that instead of compactifying theory on a circle or compact space, we compactify it on space with boundary with specified boundary conditions. Anyhow, collapsing the interval to zero size, we should be able to produce some, to see that theory effectively is three-dimensional to Q of T on the manifold W specified by gauge group G. So claim is that this three-dimensional to Q of T is in fact Chern-Simons gauge theory with gauge group G. So this is a very interesting result in a sense because in four dimensions, the type of theories that we usually have are of so-called cohomological type. Namely, they come from topological twists of supersymmetric gauge theories. And Chern-Simons field theory is usually called of a Schwarz type. Namely, it's often defined as a theory just with topological action without any Burris T symmetry, even though you can reintroduce it and rewrite it in Burris T form. So these are quite different in some sense. And yet the claim is that with suitable boundary conditions, there is a way to reconstruct Chern-Simons theory out of a four-dimensional gauge theory. So this is the first result. However, and it's interesting in its own, it has many important applications. For example, you can immediately start asking questions. What would happen to Chern-Simons invariance of a three-manifold W if you start applying, say, dualities of n equals 4 theory? Namely, what would happen to Chern-Simons theory if you underestimate duality of the underlying theory? So, and questions like this are extremely interesting, but this is not quite the direction I want to go in this talk.
What's the answer to that question?
The answer is extremely interesting. It's much easier to answer, turns out, and if there is a way to construct generalizations of such theories. Namely, one can construct a out of four-dimensional gauge theory, Chern-Simons theory, whose gauge group is effectively complex, GC. And then in that theory, it will be much easier to answer it. In fact, the answer will be essentially given by modular form, or what in the work of Zagier we call quantum modular forms. These are certain generalizations of modular forms which immediately come up very naturally in this context. In the case when I'm just describing, when the gauge group is compact on the Chern-Simons side, it's a little more subtle, but again, some modularity of a certain form is hidden in Chern-Simons theory. So, again, this is an interesting direction on its own, and to me, physically, it's interesting because so far, topological theories in four dimensions and Trans-Siemens theories lived in two different worlds, so connecting them is an interesting project. But I want to go in a slightly different direction and introduce one more ingredient. So last year, I described some work we did with Edward, where we discovered a class of surface operators in this particular version of the topological four-dimensional theory. So these are non-local operators in four-dimensional theory, which are supported on surfaces. So surface operators on some two-dimensional surface, two-dimensional submanifold, embedded in a four-manifold M. Well, in this particular setup, it's very natural to take, so for example, one can take the two-dimensional submanifold to be some curved gamma, which sits in a three-manifold, cross the interval. Namely, the way it would look like is that you pick, some loop gamma here. I'll try to draw it. It could be knotted and so on. And then it extends in a translationary invariant way to the whole four manifold. So where did I put the eraser? But there was yet another one, I think. Shall I? Oh, okay. So in this case, if you believe the claim that in the zero size limit, the theory becomes effectively Trans-Siemens, then this surface operator in the four-dimensional theory should have a one-dimensional shadow in this three-dimensional piece. Namely, it should be a line operator. And so we should get a line operator supported on this curve gamma. And it turns out that this is precisely the Wilson line on gamma, but we know that Wilson lines are labeled by, the basis is labeled by reducible representations of the group G, so R is representation of G of the compact form of the group, the same as the gauge group in Trans-Siemens theory. Well, the reason we get the complex form of the group is fairly obvious from this picture, because all the Higgs fields are projected out, and the group is the same as the structure group in the original four-dimensional theory we started with, so which is the compact form. Anyway, something interesting happens here, because surface operators in this four-dimensional theory were parameterized by a set of parameters which was very different from the set of representations. So they included discrete and continuous parameters. Discrete choices were somewhat analogous to choices of representations, but then there were several continuous parameters, which in that work we called alpha, beta, gamma, and eta. So they took values in Lie algebra or maximal torus of G, depending on which one you think of. And these are very different from specifying representation of the group. So what happens in this case is that only for certain values of these parameters, alpha, beta, gamma, and so on, the surface operator is compatible with a topological supersymmetry preserved by the boundary conditions, and the ones which are compatible, the set of those values which are compatible, precisely coincide with the set of parameters which label these representations in one way or the other, namely elements of the lattice. This problem has a generalization, so I'm going to describe it from a slightly different point of view now, which will lead us to a vast generalization, and we'll get a set of many three-dimensional theories like this one, very similar to Trans-Siemens theories, which are based on problems of quantization in one way or the other. And as a result, as one particular byproduct of this analysis, we'll be able to get to classifying representations of other real forms of G other than the compact one, sorry, of GC. To do this, let me, to make this transition smooth to this generalization, let me do the following. Let's take the three manifold W to be of the form of the following form. So take W to be R cross C, where C is a two-dimensional Riemann surface, and you can think of R as the time direction. Then it's also natural to pick a surface operator and choose a surface operator so that gamma is a copy of time. So it's in the three-dimensional picture, Wilson line will be extended in time and localized at a point in C. So what we're talking about now, I'm going to draw just a three-dimensional picture. So C is a some Riemann surface. This is time, and I'm thinking of gamma being time cross a point. So this is my point P, and that's gamma. That's the line operator. So to such a this is a static or time-independent configuration from the point of view of the effective three-dimensional theory, namely Trans-Siemens theory. And as we know, the rules of TQFT, or Hamiltonian approach to theory, associates a vector space, namely a Hilbert space, to this configuration. So it is this vector space which will play the main role in our discussion. Indeed, in order to see a representation, well, I claim that, at least with those boundary conditions that we originally put, we get representations of the compact form of G. This, isolate the problem related to those representations, to the Wilson line that we insert on this point, it suffices to take for C the local model, namely we can replace C by just by a disk, or if you wish a punctured disk, because at the origin of that we put this Wilson line operator. Then what should happen is that in this case the space H itself is itself should be the representation space associated to this representation R. So this is the local model of the question that we wish to study. Now, from the point of view of the four-dimensional gauge theory, after we specialize to this particular case, we're talking about gauge theory on a four-manifold sigma cross C, where, again, in this local approximation, C is just a disk. And sigma is a product of the R across the interval, and this is our time direction, and this is the interval that we had before. So it looks like two-dimensional world sheet with two boundary conditions that in one case I called BCC, and in the other case I call B prime. I'm worried about the silence. Are there any questions?
So how hard is the program of classifying representation of the real form of D group? How is the problem? Okay, basically, why are you interested in this problem?
because it comes out of physics. It naturally.
So then, in math, what's the status of this problem?
I'll try to say some words about it. But are there any questions about what happened so far? We'll come to this question in a couple of minutes. I want to come to answer a question only in 5 minutes because we need to rediscover a certain object which is crucial for answering the question. And then I'll be able to compare what's known and what we're doing. But first I want to, again, rediscover this object from the physical point of view. So, therefore, again, if there are any questions on this part, please let me know.
So the Hilbert space comes from taking a line bundle over the space of flat connections. And then if you have a non-compact Lie group, do you have to replace that with the twisted P-module, or how do you get the Hilbert space?
That puts us even further than Taku's question. At this level, let us just be naive. In Trans-Siemens theory with compact gauge group, the moduli space is compact, and the space of sections of that line bundle is finite dimensional. So we know that the space of conformal blocks is finite dimensional, and that's the Hilbert space. If the group is non-compact, the space will be non-compact, the effective phase space, and we'll get infinite dimensional Hilbert spaces, which is okay because for compact groups, we're only interested in finite dimensional representations, and for non-compact groups, we'll have infinite dimensional representations. So far, it roughly works. I mean, we have to see it much more explicitly. Again, I don't want to mention the language of D modules, at least not at this stage. Right, so this particular setup is in fact what appeared a lot in is the basic setup of the application to the geometric Langlands, and there the main statement that we essentially that I'm trying to explain is the following: that 4D gauge theory on four manifold, which is of the form sigma cross C, each of them being a Riemann surface, I mean topological theory, of course, is equivalent to two-dimensional topological sigma model which is a theory of maps from two-dimensional Riemann surface, in this case sigma, into some target space, and in this target space is the certain moduli space of solutions to the gauge theory equations of motion on the other curve, which is C. So in this case, it turns out that this is the moduli space of solutions to Hitchens equations with group G on a curve C. So these two theories are equivalent, and because of the topological nature of the theory, you can think of it not as a four-dimensional one, but as a two-dimensional one, as long as this four-manifold splits into direct product. In particular, in this particular setup, what happens is that from this sigma model point of view, the Hilbert space that we are finding, so first of all, in this case, the Wolschmidt sigma has two boundaries, and the Hilbert space H is nothing but the space of strings, open strings connecting between these two brains. So I'll just write it first as home of one brain BCC to the other brain B prime. So this is a space of open string states between two brains. Brains BCC and B prime, which are brains on this target manifold on MH. Okay. So this is the language in which I prefer to continue the talk and think about this Hilbert space. In particular, again, when C is just a disk with a single surface operator, we're supposed to find the representation space, at least in this particular example that I just explained. And again, instead of talking about boundary conditions, I'll be talking about brains on a certain manifold. So in the goal of my talk is to now make very precise what the space is in the problem relevant to classification of representations, and what the D-brains are. And then we'll see that in some sense there is a dictionary, there is a one-to-one map between equivalence classes of brains and equivalence classes of representations. That will be the final claim. And again, I'll connect it to known facts. So for applications to representation theory, we're interested in taking this for C to be the puncture disk with a surface operator and in this case this moduli space is very easy to describe. So the space turns out to be a hypercolor space reflecting the fact that we started with n equals 4 theory, so it has hypercolor structure, and this is the total space of the cotangent bundle to what's called the flag manifold, namely, you can think of it as a quotient of the group by the maximal torus. So in the example of SU2 gauge theory, G maximal torus is just U1, SU2 mod U1 is a copy of a two-sphere, and the space we're talking about, this manifold M, would be just cotangent bundle to S2, or to CP1, if you wish, but I don't want to favor any of the complex structure here. Now, I have to explain what happens to this boundary conditions in the sigma model language, namely what the boundary condition that I call BCC and what boundary condition B prime correspond to. From the point of view of gauge theory, there are, at least in this SU2 example and here in more general case of T star to G mod T, the directions in the base, namely in the compact part, are parameterized by modes of the gauge field, roughly speaking, and the directions in the fibers, in the cotangent directions, are parameterized by the Higgs field. So, for instance, when we put boundary condition B prime, as we did before, when we set all the Higgs fields to zero, so let's start with this brain first. So this was a brain where we set phi equals zero. This is a brain supported on the zero section G mod T sitting inside T store of G mod T. So this is easy to answer. There was a second brain, which we called BCC, and this is a little bit more subtle. It's called CC because this is a so-called canonical quasitropic brain. And to describe this, I have to say a little bit more about geometry of this space. So our space M, which is, again, total space of the cotangent bundle to G mod T. By the way, I'm already giving away partial answer to the main question of this talk, namely, what kind of brains and on what space give us classification of representations. Namely, I just answered half of this question. It's on this space that brains will give us classification of reps, of various real forms of G. Here it's a compact, so we complexify it, and statement is that different real forms of GC will correspond to brains in this space. So again, the rest of the talk will be to explain which brains. So this space is hyperkeller. This is important. So it has three complex structures, which I'll call I, J, and K. These are different complex structures, which satisfy the usual relation that I times J is equal to K. And it has three Keller forms, omega I, omega J, omega k. These are Keller two forms. So because the model has so many complex structures, in fact, continuous families corresponding to linear combinations of those, the topological sigma model that we get could be either A model or B model, depending on which one we pick. So there are many choices here. And the choices are, in some sense, all related, because at least on this space, all these structures on the total space of this cotangent bundle can be rotated one to the other. So in fact, it doesn't matter. If you want to focus, for example, on A model, you can pick A model with respect to any of the symplectic structures, because again, they're all symmetric. And A models and B models will be related by mirror symmetry. So without loss of generality, one can focus on A model for choice of symplectic structure, which is equal, say, to omega k, to the last one. It means that we'll be interested in topological A brains. With respect to this symplectic structure. And one of the simple example of topological A brains includes Lagrangian A brains, supported on mid-dimensional submanifolds and in the total space on our manifold M, which is this cotangent bundle. And in fact, the brain B prime that we found is in fact a Lagrangian A brain supported on mid-dimensional submanifold, which is indeed zero section of this cotangent bundle. Now, another class of brains that exists in special cases, but our context is precisely one of those special cases, are quasitropic brains, which could be supported on submanifolds of middle dimension and higher, and they carry non-trivial gauge fields. So they could be A-brains, as discovered by Kapustin and Orlov, A-brains on submanifolds of MH, which carry gauge fields with non-trivial curvature. Of a Chan-Patton bundle F, and F has to satisfy certain conditions, namely in the A model for some symplectic structure omega, F times omega inverse should square to minus 1. That's the condition under which such brains exist, again, as being discovered by Kapustin and Orlov a few years ago. So the boundary condition, which I call BCC, is in fact one of those quasitropic brains. In other words, BCC is a space-filling brain on all of the Torgus space, and it has to be a brain for our chosen symplectic form, omega k. So one way to solve this condition is, for example, to pick F to be omega j. And in this case, omega j times omega k inverse will be a complex structure I. And indeed, it scores to minus 1. So that's a way to solve such conditions. So you should think of this as a space-filling brain on T star of G mod T and carrying non-trivial gauge field such that its curvature is one of the symplectic forms. Now, even if you didn't know about boundary conditions and the gauge theory that I described in the very beginning, you could start with this formulation of the problem, and then in this A model on MH, which is T star cotangent bundle to this flex space, you could compute the space H as space of open strings between these two brains, B prime, and discover that this is a representation space for particular brains BCC and B prime that I discussed before.
I still have a question. I should make sure I'm understanding. Is that requirement on the Chan-Patton bundle the same as saying that in the 4D theory on that boundary the field strength is indissoluble? Is it coming from that? Or?
Yes. Yes, this constraint here is precisely the counterpart of the F plus restricted to W. That's right. So the topological supersymmetry in gauge theory is precisely the topological supersymmetry in the A model. So in this case, what happens is that in this example, by which I mean for this particular brains BCC and B prime, they're both and B prime are both of type ABA, with respect to different complex structures. Namely, the way we constructed them is that they're of type A for symplectic form in complex structure K, namely in the A model, but they're consistent with the B model supersymmetry in complex structure J. So in particular, this is clear, for instance, for this brain, because curvature here is proportional to the Keeler form, but not any one omega J. So we can think of this space-filling brain BCC as carrying holomorphic gauge bundle, holomorphic and complex structure J. That's why it's of type B here. And then it's easy to check that if it's B in one complex structure and A in the other, it's A in the remaining ones. So in particular, we can look at a space of open strings between these two brains, from the point of view of complex structure J, and then what we're going to find is that these are simply given bisections of a holomorphic vector bundle over the support of the brain B prime, which is a copy of G mod T. So these are holomorphic sections of some vector bundle on the place where the support of this brain overlaps, and this is of course controlled by the Lagrangian guy because the other one fills the entire space, and this is precisely our flag manifold G mod T. So this is how I was claiming that we get finite dimensional representations of the compact form of the group, and in this case, this is precisely the statement of Borel Wellbot theorem. So this is how we recover it, but generalization that gives us other real forms of G is very simple. Now, in fact, we have all the ingredients so that I can summarize the main statement. Any questions in the meantime?
So you're going to do SL2R as an example in a few minutes.
Yes, I can do this. Right. So in fact, that's a natural thing which I was wanting to do.
Yes.
And I probably won't have time for it, but I'm going to recover all interesting phenomena about if you vary parameters of representations of SL2R, sometimes they split into reducible ones, sometimes they split into extensions, and this will be interpreted as phenomenon where brains form bound states or split into reducible combinations of several brains. So that's where I'm heading to. Again, I probably won't illustrate this for SL2R, but at least I think I'll be able to summarize or give one concrete example of such a phenomenon. So indeed, now much has been, what we need has been already introduced. So the statement will be the following, that in general, considering a K model, by which I mean the A model with symplectic structure omega K, again, as we agreed, they're all symmetric, so it doesn't matter which one I pick, so I just like letter K for some reason. On the total space, which is that same space, which is tor of G mod T, and then the claim will be that A brains, of course, by this I mean A brains of type K, so I could just again say K brains, or their equivalence classes will correspond to representations of some real form GR of GC. Well, I should notice, by the way, that this is a side remark. So just to clarify the point, that we start with a gauge theory or something that involves a compact form G, then for some reason it gets complexified. The reason is a good reason. First of all, simply because the space, our space MH, which is on one hand isomorphic to the tangent bundle to G mod T, is also isomorphic to the largest so-called regular complex coadjoint orbit. Coadjoint orbit of the complex form of the group. So this total space on which we're doing the sigma model is intimately related not to the real form of the group, but in fact to the complex form of the group. So in some sense, GC is more fundamental once we talk about the target space. But the choice of representation, which is associated to a choice of the brain B prime, which in the previous example we picked Lagrangian, and in fact, in all other examples, at least for SL2R, we'll also pick it to be Lagrangian. So choice of this brain somehow determines which real form of of GC we want to study. And the way it happens is the following. Notice that in this case, Lagrangian brains were wrapping the were wrapped on the base of this cotangent bundle, on the compact part of the manifold. And there is a natural action of the compact form on this space, namely G itself, the compact group, acts on this space. So if you think about SU2 example, then this is a sphere, SU2 mod U1, and SU2 acts on a sphere in a natural way. So therefore, it turns out that for a number of reasons, if you study all possible A brains on this target space, even up to equivalence, this is still too big. So what you want to study is all AK brains somehow gives you, so is not the right thing for two reasons. First of all, it gives you too large set, which has nothing to do with representations. And secondly, it would not know of which real form you choose. So in fact, we want to look at all AK brains. So therefore, we need to consider in this equivalence all A brains, and in many cases, until Lagrangian ones will suffice, invariant under a symmetry group, which is the maximal compact subgroup of this real form. Notice that it works in the case of SU2 that we just described. In this case, compact coincides with the real form, and the brains, for example, wrapped on two sphere were invariant under this group. So that's what we want to do in more general case. We want to consider Lagrangian A brains on this target space invariant with respect to maximal compact form. So in this way, this invariance will automatically encode information about which real form we choose, and classification of equivalence classes of such A brains will be equivalent to classification of equivalence classes of representations. So in the remaining 10 minutes, which is just perfect, let me describe how this works for us all.
Why?
Not necessarily. I have to say I'm obviously not describing some of the salient features of this, but that's not really. So far it could be any form. So, example. So representations of a real form of GC, which is SL to OR. Well, it's the same target that we have to consider because complexification of SU2 and SL to OR are the same. So we still have to take the same target, namely M, which is T star of S2. Because, as I say, it's really the complex form which determines the choice of target. But now we want to consider A-brains invariant under the maximal compact KOR, which in this case is SO2. So it's a circle group. So we want to consider S1 invariant A brains on this space. So, well, we want to, moreover, again, as I say, most of the time this will be Lagrangian, and we need to achieve two things. First, we want to have a description of this space where all color structures are manifest, in particular so that we'll be able to easily see which brains are Lagrangian. And secondly, we want to make this circle action manifest. Well, physicists know how to do this extremely well. Interestingly, not all mathematicians do, but the following description is useful. So we can use the so-called Gibbons-Hawking ansatz to write the metric on this space in the form H times dx squared plus H inverse d chi plus some connection. I'll call it A, even though it has nothing to do with the gauge field in the original setup. I hope it's not too confusing. And here, x is a vector in R3. Chi is a circle-valued variable which takes values from 0 up to 2 pi. And as usual, H is the harmonic function, x minus x0 plus I have to say that this connection A satisfies the usual equation that curl of A is gradient of H. So this is the Gibbons-Hawking form of writing the metric on the tangent bundle to the two-sphere as a two-centered Taub-Knot solution, which is a circle vibration. This is being the circle, and this is being a base over R3. So, well, therefore, the picture for this looks roughly the following. If this is cartoon 4 or 3, there are two points at positions x0 and minus x0 somewhere here, x0. Where the circle shrinks. So you can substitute this harmonic function and see that there are two points in the base where a circle collapses. So to compare to the previous notations, I should say that this vector of x is precisely what we called before alpha, beta, and gamma. this is just in passing. Now, we shift to describe this metric on the space in a way which makes the action of the compact group manifest. So now we'll have to look at Lagrangian breaks. And then we'll be able to see classification of representations of a salt ore. To do this, I have to know what the Lagrangian condition is. Lagrangian brain is defined by saying that the corresponding Keeler form vanishes when you're restricted to it. So I have to give you a basis of to write what are the Keeler forms. Omega I, omega j, omega k. Well, again, this Gibbons Hawking ansatz makes it extremely easy to write what this is. This is simply d chi plus a times dx, where this dot means that here I'm combining all quantities in a three-dimensional vector, and this dot really means in the product in the space of indices I, j, and k. And then, hopefully, again, in the self-explanatory notations, there is a second term which involves the vector product of the same type of quantities. So it's dx, vector product dx, with the factor of h in here. So let's look at it. One simple way to construct Lagrangian brains in this four-dimensional space, which are invariant under the circle action, is to say that they wrap the circle direction. So therefore, there should be one-dimensional in the three-dimensional base here. Well, if that's the case, then restriction of omega k to the world volume of our Lagrangian brain B prime will be zero precisely if and only if it's contained in a two-dimensional plane which is transverse to the z direction, so or to the k direction in this three-dimensional in R3. If image of B prime under this moment map projection to the space of moments map of the circle action is contained in R2 in a plane sitting inside this R3, namely the plane orthogonal to the k direction. Because anything one-dimensional in the base would make this term vanish, and we need to achieve vanishing of this condition. So this could be generic, because the brain wraps S1 in the fiber. So it has to be. So this has to be zero in order for it to be Lagrangian. So it is contained in a plane, and now things become a little easier, because instead of drawing this three-dimensional cube with two Taubnet centers, with two points where this circle collapses, I can just draw the plane in which our brain B prime is contained. Classification of SL2R reducible representations corresponds to a classification of KR invariant A brains, which, as we just described, are contained in the two-dimensional plane. So here I'm drawing this two-dimensional plane because our image of the Lagrangian brain has to see it in here. Well, and now there are several possibilities. So I'm going to give you the answer, and you'll be able to see that many properties of two representations of SLTOR agree with what we have in the brain language. So first of all, if you have two centers contained in the plane, there are several options. So it may happen that none of the centers is contained in the plane. It may happen that both of them are. And that's determined by these parameters alpha, beta, and gamma. And no centers is here. Then you could have this different possibilities, how many such centers are contained in the plane where we consider this brain. So for certain values of parameters, which become parameters of representations, you may have Lagrangian brains, if no center lives in this plane, it could be any curve, any planar curve. Any such curve is Lagrangian, and you can easily see that equivalence classes of such curves, which are simple ectomorphisms of the A model, are precisely all possible wiggles of this brain. So we are classifying it up to all possible motions in this two-dimensional plane. This corresponds to simple ectomorphisms, which are symmetries of the A model. In this case, when one center happens here, so I should say that those guys, you can very easily convince yourself that they should correspond to a principal series representation. Well, the world volume of this brain is of topology R cross S1, because there is a circle on top of this line everywhere, and it's topologically a cylinder because circle nowhere shrinks. It could only collapse at the centers, and this doesn't happen here. So these are principal series representations. Principal series, which are in mathematical literature known to be obtained by quantization of a cylinder. This is principal series representations, not just like this one, but something more interesting could happen because a brain could actually end here. So this would be a discrete series, and this is discrete series, and its topology is, so someone tell me, what's the topology of this guy? Right, it's a plane or cigar, so because circle collapses. Good. So there are such possibilities here as well, but here we have something more. What can happen is that there could be a brain stretched from one center to the other. So this corresponds to, someone tells me what they correspond to. Right, so this is a sphere. In fact, that's precisely our sphere that we started with. So these are finite dimensional representations. So finite dimensional reps of SLTOR, which in this case are simply induced from or similar to the ones in SV2 case. Now, if you look at the textbooks on representation theory, you immediately find some statements that as parameters of the principal series representations vary, it sometimes can split into a direct sum of two discrete series representations. Well, that's when it happens. You vary parameters. I didn't give you identification, but you can follow this argument much more carefully and convince yourself that parameters of representations are identified with position of this brain. Again, I told you that all possible wiggles are possible, but it's not quite true. You have to preserve symplectic area of the A model, and that corresponds to fixed and certain modulus here, which determines how far away from the center it sits. So if that modulus approaches zero, you split this brain into discrete series representations. Then, if you do it in another regime of parameters, namely tuned parameters, Casimir, to such a value that I think its imaginary part is zero, then what you find is that two centers live on this plane, and a principal series representation splits into extension of two discrete series representations by a finite dimensional one. And this extension in physics language or in deep brain language is understood as forming a bound state. So all the statements about representations could be simply recovered by considering wiggles of such brains, again, up to symmetries of the model, which are simple ectomorphisms. And basically, again, up to the subtlety of preserving symplectic volume, all possible wiggles are allowed. So the only thing you're not allowed to do, which is not a symmetry, is crossing this center. Crossing this circle. So brain can wiggle, but you can easily convince yourself that in this setup, for instance, this Lagrangian brain and this Lagrangian brain are not in the same class under this symplectomorphic equivalence. In fact, it has to do with it's another topic. It's a acute realization of some interesting fact in symplectic geometry. So I'm going to conclude with this statement and just leave it to those of you who are curious. You could consider kind of a model of this, and it's a simple computation that you should be able to do with just all the information is here on the board to convince yourself that these two brains represented by circles in the base, one is encircling the point and the other not, are not symplectomorphic. So what is the topology of these two guys? Just as easy as other examples. What? Any guess? So if this was a sphere, then...
Torus.
Torus, right. So both of these are tori because, again, circle never collapses. You have one circle in the base and one which fibers over it. So what is the topology of this ambient space? Well, physicists know this probably immediately. We have just one Taubnat center. So it's topologically R4, right? So then we are considering basically R4 with a certain symplectic structure. And in symplectic topology, it's known that many classes of Lagrangian submanifolds are equivalent if they can be realized as Lagrangian submanifolds in R4, except for tori. So this is a phenomenon which is known of... So sometimes you encounter knotted Lagrangian submanifolds which are not related by continuous isotopies. And this is the usual torus, as you can easily convince yourself. And this is what's sometimes called exotic Lagrangian torus in the theory of symplectic Fourier manifolds. So interestingly, this supports two disks, holomorphic disks, which are bounded by A cycle and a B cycle, if you think again of a torus as a donut. And this is exotic guy because it has only one holomorphic disk, not two. So anyway, I conclude with this part.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Why did you do this 20 years ago before I had to suffer through a graduate course? Or a Chandra module.
I have a quick question. In the SL2 case, this space is just the Iguchi-Hansen sphere. So there you have like this SO4 isometry like you have in the Kepler problem. Mm-hmm. Is there a meaning to it in terms of representation?
Not really. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
It's a rather, first of all, it's a rather special example, but secondly, No.
Okay. Any more questions? Okay. Thank you very much again.
I don't know how to turn it.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you.